Hello, friends and family, and thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, returning after a brief tangle with the Grim Reaper and the dark forest of disease that all of us will eventually have to hike into as long as our souls are imprisoned in the fleshy towers that we call our human bodies. Yes, it's true. The effects of radiation therapy sent me for a temporary day hike into the ancient forest of disease. And I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that this forest is a nice place. No, the Forest of Disease is not the sort of place you'd want to have a romantic picnic with your baby boo. And I'm not going to tell you that the animals that live in the Forest of Disease are the sort of animals that you might find in a petting zoo. Unless that petting zoo happened to be in the third circle of hell. Yes, the animals in the Forest of Disease are frightening beings, and I've seen a few of them firsthand. I've seen the greasy raccoon of nausea with his swirling yellow eyes that climbs into your anus and squirms its way through your intestinal tract and turns your stomach into a punching bag so that everything you smell smells like the inner folds of a morbidly obese geriatric's underarm, and every moment is a fight against projectile vomiting wheat thins into your couch. And I've been attacked by the woodpecker of fatigue that comes flapping down from the hairy trees of the Forest of Despair and digs his claws into your back and pecks his way into your spine, injecting you with a cold poison of fatigue that makes you sleep for 12 hours a day in a coma-like nap. And I played chess with the cheating ape of logic, who shows you that it's easy to be positive when you're healthy, but an entirely different game altogether when a demonic fatigue woodpecker is injecting poison into your spine, or a nausea raccoon with swirling yellow eyes has climbed into your anus. And yes, I drank the wine of sadness with the techno moth, and that was fun. Now, I could go on and on about the Forest of Disease, and about the fat-ass, mewling, whiny goblin thing that invites you to go swimming in the Lake of Despair and give up, but I won't. Because the Forest of Disease is no more or no less than every other aspect of the phenomenal field that exists in this universe. It is a temporary and transient waveform. Something that will occasionally arise in the life of all human beings, but is guaranteed to dissipate. To quote the Bhagavad Gita, it is the body alone that gives rise to cold and heat, pleasure and pain. These experiences come and go and do not exist forever, and we must learn to bear them. Truly, the wise man who is not disturbed by these things, indifferent alike to pain and pleasure, is fit for eternal life. In that forest of disease and despair, you see, I made the decision that I will no longer let my primitive ape-descendant instincts be confused by the laser pointer of experience that God has been teasing our species with since we climbed out of our moldering proto-hominid ape caves and devoured the psychedelic mushrooms that expanded our neocortex and turned us into humans. And as far as I'm concerned, this human existence is perfection. And that perfection includes the colon-climbing nausea raccoon and the spine-drilling fatigue woodpecker and even the creepy techno moth. And as long as I'm able, I will use my powers of perception to transform every aspect of phenomena that arises in my subjective universe into a vehicle that brings me closer to a state of unitive consciousness, or at least a colorful symbol that I can ramble about on this podcast. And I invite you to do the same. When you find yourself in your forest of despair and that raccoon comes knocking on the door of your asshole, I want you to turn to the raccoon and smile and say, "I love you, raccoon." And when that creepy demonic woodpecker with the sharp claws lands on your back and begins drilling into your spine, turn back and smile and say, "I know who you are, woodpecker. I know that you are just a force of love that's wearing the temporary and transient mask of turbulent phenomena. And peel back that mask and see underneath the truth. And the truth is that everything is love. And to quote Mayor Baba, to penetrate into the essence of all being and significance, and to release the fragrance of that inner attainment for the guidance and benefit of others by expressing in the world forms of truth, love, purity, and beauty. This is the soul game which has any intrinsic and absolute worth. Play the game, brothers and sisters. Love the anal raccoon. Hug the drilling woodpecker. Kiss the techno moth and recognize that this entire material universe is simply a ghost story being told to you by a loving parent at an interdimensional slumber party. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. We have returned. This organ track is called I'm Healed. It's by Moses Tyson Jr. We're back. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour. This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, I'm excited to announce we've got a brand new sponsor who's never sponsored us before. We are sponsored by WireIsAlive.com. Wire is Alive, WireIsAlive.com, is an interesting website. It's a website where if you submit a story idea to them, they will, at no charge, transform that story idea into a story. For example, I recently submitted a story idea to them, which is that I wanted a story about Glenn Beck getting thrown back in time by a particle accelerator accident and becoming one of Thomas Jefferson's slaves. And within a week, they had written an awesome story based on this idea. And again, this is at no charge. So if you want an awesome novelty gift for somebody and you're not a writer, or if you are a writer and the idea is just something that you don't have time to work on, or if you want to give your boss some kind of weird story that you've written, or if you're a stalker, for example, let's say you're stalking somebody, but you don't have the gift of creativity that the writers over at WireIsAlive.com have, and you want to send a story to your stalkee about how you guys get married and how you end up fusing together and turning into one sausage-like gelatinous love log floating down the rivers of paradise, then you could go to WireIsAlive.com and you could submit your story idea, and that story idea would be turned into a story. Not only will they do that, but it's also just a cool website to go through and read the current dispatches that they've been working on. This is something I love about the internet, is every once in a while it produces true novelty. This kind of thing is awesome, where, as far as I know, in the course of human history, there's never been a service that allows you to send story ideas to someone who just writes them for free. I don't know, maybe it's existed. Maybe if you were like if you owned a manor house and you'd managed to imprison a scribe, then you could, in your opium trances, have the scribe turn your opium hallucinations into stories. But I don't think that it's ever been available to every single person on the planet. Now it is. Go to WireIsAlive.com, check out the story they wrote about my idea, submit your own story, and experience the weird satisfaction that comes from watching an idea you have go through the neurology of a team of writers and transform into a story. WireIsAlive.com. Go there today. The link is located at DuncanTrussell.com. Here's an interesting trivia fact. The clitoris is, in fact, a penis that hasn't fully developed from exposure to testosterone. And that a lot of times when people are going through transitional therapies and have decided to change from a woman into a man, the testosterone that they ingest can cause their clitoris to grow into something that looks very similar to a penis. In fact, it probably is a penis. So the clitoris, as many of you know, has more nerves in it than any other organ in the human body. The thing is packed with nerves. It's like a suitcase filled with nerves. You can't imagine. I'll never know what it feels like to have a clitoris. I only know what it feels like to have a penis, which is the penis is kind of a ruined clitoris. It's a clitoris that's fallen into a vat of radioactive chemicals and is boiled and festered and extended and grown and turned into a tube creature, something that seems like it should be jutting out of the walls of an alien spaceship and spraying acid on astronauts. The clitoris, though, the clitoris is a penis before it gets exposed to ape chemicals, and it is so very sensitive. Now, there is a disease that affects some human beings, and it's known as clitoral flesh syndrome, which is where your entire body has as many nerves in it as a human clitoris. The Duke, who started the company that sponsors the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Short Design T-shirts, Duke Roderick Hemingway, he had this terrible syndrome. His entire body had the sensitivity of a clitoris. And what this meant was that wherever any slapping him on the back could put him into a three-week coma. It took him hours to get into his bathtub, just to just sit into the bathtub, because the experience of touching that water would cause his body to squirt. His entire body would just spray every pore in his body. If a wind blew against him, every pore in his body would spray sexual lubricant, and he'd look like one of those kid sprinklers that you put out in the summer, just everything gushing lube everywhere. And if this happened on a hardwood floor, it would cause him to fall down on the hardwood floor. Hitting the hardwood floor would put him into a coma. So he was going through this terrible cycle of going into a coma, coming out of the coma, experiencing any kind of external stimulus, squirting out of every pore in his body, and then going back into a coma. It was the Duke's family that came up with the idea of creating a t-shirt so soft that a man whose flesh was made of clitoral skin could wear it without going into a coma, and that was the beginning of Shore Design t-shirts. Shore Design t-shirts are t-shirts that would actually feel comfortable if wrapped around the human clitoris. God, think how comfortable they're going to feel when they're wrapped around your harsh, calloused upper body skin. Imagine how good you're going to feel when you wear a t-shirt so soft that it would work on a human clitoris. That's right. You want to know what it's like to be a clitoris wrapped in the soft and angel wings? Go to shoredesignt-shirt.com. Shoredesignt-shirts.com. We'll have the link. The link is all over duncantrussell.com. Go to shoredesignt-shirts.com. Check out some of these shirts. If you just want to wear a soft t-shirt, or if your lover's clitoris is the size of a human torso, you're going to love these shirts. Wrap these shirts around your baby's sweet love knob. Wrap them around your upper body. Go to shoredesignt-shirts.com. Put my name in. You get 10% off these awesome shirts. There are many ways that you could help support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Go to duncantrussell.com, check out the shop, buy one of the t-shirts or autograph posters. Another way that you could help support this podcast is you could go to Amazon, our Amazon.com portal, which is located at duncantrussell.com. If you're going to buy something from Amazon, why not go through our portal? We get like 8% of anything you buy. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It's a cool way to support the podcast. Another cool way to support the podcast is that you can go to audibletrial.com/family hour. Sign up for a trial membership with Audible. Audible has some of the most awesome audiobooks on earth. The trial membership gets you one free audiobook. You can then cancel your membership, and they still will send us $15. You won't want to cancel the membership because you'll get addicted to audiobooks. There's something really cool about them because you can walk your dog and listen to audiobooks. Get on a treadmill and listen to audiobooks. You can listen to these audiobooks when you take a bath, or you can play the audiobooks for your baby, and it'll make your baby smarter. That's guaranteed. Go to audibletrial.com/family hour. If you haven't signed up for this yet, sign up for it. It helps support the podcast. And if you want to really be hardcore, you can go to duncantrussell.com and send us a donation, which is very much appreciated right now because I have accrued a nice fat stack of medical bills. Believe it or not, it's not free to get irradiated. It actually costs money. And if you want to help out, it's much appreciated. And to those of you who have been sending donations, God bless you. Thank you very much for supporting this podcast. And for those of you who don't feel like sending donations, don't feel like buying a Shore Design t-shirt, getting a free story written, getting an audiobook, or going through the Amazon portal, I understand that too. I'm flattered and honored that you even listen to this podcast, but I really would love it if you'd sign up at duncantrussell.com and join the forum and get in on the conversations that are happening there. We have a book club. We have a Minecraft server. Okay. So that's that. Let's get on with the podcast. Today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is some kind of brilliant savant writer. His name's Dan Harmon. He hails from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's an Emmy-nominated writer. He wrote and created NBC's Community. He also directed and executive produced it. He co-created the Sarah Silverman program, and he currently is working on an Adult Swim cartoon called Rick and Morty. He also hosts the Harmontown podcast. I was just on this podcast at a sold-out Egyptian theater on a Monday night with Mark Maron and Bobcat Goldthwait. It was a blast. This human being is a sweet, wonderful man, and we are lucky to have him on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. So if you are a practitioner of the dark arts, why not liquefy a cat and send that life energy directly into the heart chakra of this wonderful human being? If you're a healer, some kind of witch, or if you know any kind of positivity, good luck spells, inject them into this man's psychic, subjective chakra body and give him a good day. Please don't actually liquefy a cat. Just send this guy good energy. That's what I'm saying. I love cats and I don't want anyone to do anything to hurt a cat. Everyone, welcome Dan Harmon to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Dan Harmon.
Yeah.
I'm going to start off with a super uncomfortable question. How's that?
All right. Let's do it.
Man, I've been reading your book that you've put out with your blogs, and I was on your show that you did at the Hollywood Theater, and I want to talk to you about something. This is going to sound weird, but you remind me of Elliot Smith. And this is going to seem really weird, not suicidal Elliot Smith, but like something about you, a little bit Dino Stanatopoulos. You guys just seem to have this thing where you're able to produce instantly amazing stuff. I knew it was going to make you uncomfortable. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be like blowing smoke. I don't want to be like, I'm sorry to start off like that, but it's sometimes I see people like you and I'm like, well, it's Galifianakis too. You get around him, you're like, well, this is an unfair race.
Oh, man.
You guys are running on, you got a different cylinder up there or something that's letting you kind of, the filter's gone and you're creating like instantly hilarious stuff with no fear in front of 600 people at the Egyptian Theater. You were doing these hilarious raps. I'm not saying it was like God coming down through your raps about wanting to fuck people's moms, but it was hilarious. But you just don't seem scared. What the fuck, man? What's your secret?
Well, I mean, I've died on stage a lot. Like I used to do terrible stand-up. I think my secret is, specifically referring to what you're talking about, the secret of not being afraid on stage is to not get paid to do it, is to feel like it's a hobby,
right?
Because I can't get fired from you know, bad rapping. Like I can't. The worst thing that can happen is people get completely quiet, and even then they're just kind of listening. Like I'm pretty comfortable with, you know, 10 or 20 minutes of silence, because it's a podcast. It's not a stand-up act.
So, right.
I mean, I when I did do stand-up, I was terrible at it because I was bad at writing the jokes and I was impatient. I don't have that craftsmanship that Patton and Zach and like these people that like their calling is to, like, I mean, they're good at writing material and then they present it to an audience and then they refine it and they're like, they're really fearless and like pursuing this craft. I don't have any of that. I'm just another guy that likes attention. Like we all fantasize about being a radio DJ or a substitute teacher and I think we all have an equal amount of like I wish I was a rock star or a person that talked to people through a microphone and had them listen. So it's, for me, it's just a fantasy. Therefore, what was I went all over the place there. I used to do really bad stand-up in Milwaukee when I came out to LA, I hung it up because I was like, well, I just moved to a world where everyone's talented.
Right.
Everyone that was the most talented person in their hometown, everyone that was the most creative person in their art class or writing class in their high school, they're all moving to LA. Like this is more so than college. Like it's time to like ramp up my efforts and consolidate them into places where I feel like I can have an edge. And for me, that was writing stuff on paper. I felt like less people are doing that. Less people are good at it. And I'm better at it than a lot of people. So I'm not gonna perform anymore. I'm not gonna do improv. I'm not gonna do stand up. I'm not gonna be an actor. I'm gonna type.
Do you have a writing schedule?
No.
So how does it happen? Like, what's your process for getting some of those blogs? How would you write one of those? Just you wait for inspiration?
Yeah, I think virtually all of those are just. We're probably done while on a deadline for something else. So, it becomes the most attractive thing in the world to do anything but what you're doing.
Yes.
Like that, if you've ever written on a deadline,
yeah, it's
someone
terrible.
Pay you to write something,
yeah,
and you have to have it to them by September 12th or whatever. It's unbelievable the things you end up masturbating to. It's unbelievable the games you end up playing on your phone. Like, stupid games. Pocket planes.
I want to specifically the masturbation aspect of writing. This is something that needs to be studied by social psychologists because...
You jerk off a ton more.
Yes.
I hope Erin doesn't listen to this because it feels like a slight to her. She's sleeping upstairs. It's like... Why not share it with her? Why not go upstairs and, you know, give it to her? The answer is because she's sleeping and there's rain sounds playing on the speakers. And I'm like, I'm sitting in front of the computer. But I'm telling you, like, this morning, I was supposed to be doing a pass on a Rick and Morty script for my Adult Swim show.
Yeah.
For my friend, Justin Roiland, who's, like, listen, he's not Bob Greenblatt. He's not the man.
Yeah.
I can't, because he's waiting on me to do this pass of the script. I jerked off, like, three times.
Yeah.
In a row.
Well, this is the reason that I'm curious about the orgasmic element of it, is because this is something that, like... In the occult and in metaphysics and in tantric yoga, they all have these different ways of like mythologizing semen or yeah. Like it's your creative essence. You're supposed to store it up, right. Save it, hold it. They say boxers hold it in,
right.
You know, and there, it seems like, is it just an easier way to get the creative energy out? Is that what it is? Because semen is the most creative energy on Earth.
I one guess off the top of my head would be that it might be the cause effect might be that people noticed that when you have shit to do, you jerk off more. And that when you're jerking off, you're not getting your shit done.
Yeah, right. They reversed it.
Semen retention, as the Taoists
yeah.
Like practice in some sects and stuff like that. It's like oh that you know, and even the Catholics that idea that women and coming and you know like worrying about your dick, which is all you'd worry about if you were allowed to worry about stuff.
Yeah.
It just gets in the way. So get, put that out of your head. You're not allowed to jerk off, Muhammad Ali. So he's gonna get into the ring like a little more prepared than someone whose coach said, "Hey, if you feel like jerking off at any point during this, like, there's a special room for you on the side of the gym. There's a fur couch and a pile of magazines."
Man, I've tried not jerking off. Before, and after a certain amount of time, you get more energy. Like there's pepper in you after a certain amount of time, but it's all based on wanting to fuck. It's not like you're like, God, now let's sit down and write a novel. It's just, you're just thinking more about jerking off.
Yeah. There's a whole thing, and I'm actually afraid to look into too much. I guess It's NoFap, you know, like you see these discussions on Reddit,
yeah,
and stuff like it, you know, people obviously when you're in Reddit or you're on 4chan or something, like you're deep in the heart of people who have the biggest problem with what we're talking about,
yeah,
and the most experience with it, and there's sections of those people who are experimenting with not jerking off, not allowing themselves to. You know, so there's blogs by people that go like, okay, it's my 60th day not doing this, you know, obviously my sex life is better, I'm more productive, I've lost weight, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
This is an interesting thing that I've been reading, that Ram Dass talks about, which is, well, okay, so he uses the example of like people who are non-smokers, but they're just like, yeah, it's been 14 days and 6 hours since I had a cigarette. Mm-hmm. And so in their minds, they're still smoking. They're physically, it's healthier, but they're still within themselves. They haven't solved the problem yet. So his thing when it comes to this, because what we're talking about here is discipline. And the beginning of all spiritual practices that I've studied, it's discipline. It's like the very first thing is get control of your body. And then all the other shit happens after you've gotten control of the monkey part of yourself. But he says, but still the way you don't, that discipline is only temporary until you've eradicated the root cause of whatever the thing is that's causing you problems.
So what, and like what?
He says, make it an offering. So if you're into like jerking off, so and you ritualize
it. Say to God, like, okay, that's how I quit smoking.
Really?
Did you know that I talked to you about
that? Nope.
That's exactly how I quit smoking. I said to God, I am giving this up, this thing that I love to do, smoking cigarettes, because not because I think you're some kind of God that hates tobacco or wants me to live forever. Only because you're a God that wants to exist, wants to be in my life. I know that's what you're into, as much as I'm into cigarettes. So if I give up smoking for you, that's a huge way of saying, more than with a prayer, more than with a bunch of small talk on an AM radio show, more than with yelling at your kids and dragging them to church, giving up smoking for God is like a huge way of saying you believe that God exists. And I cemented the deal by saying, if I ever have another cigarette, like you, I know that you will destroy my life to prove that you did exist. But I also ask that, you know, please let me get the Sarah Silverman program, like job, like I'm on my way to this meeting.
Yeah,
I did it twice. I did it once with Monster House. It was like I brokered that deal, got the Monster House job. Then I reneged after I felt like my life had gone into the toilet anyway. I was like, I started smoking in a on stage in a community theater show, and then I just started smoking again. Then my life really went into the shitter.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck. I thought it couldn't get worse. So then I was unemployed forever. And then right before I got the Sarah Silverman show, the job writing that show, I did it again. I said, okay, for real, for real.
Yeah.
I'm back. Sorry. But I mean, and I have not... Not only have I never had a cigarette since, it's been like 8 years, I don't think about smoking, and I don't remember that I was a smoker.
It fell away.
Yeah.
You don't, you're done, you've cured, you've got rid of whatever the thing was by sacrificing it.
Yeah, people will be in my house that are smokers, and they'll pull out a cigarette and head for the front door because it's Los Angeles, and I'll go, wait, I think I have an ashtray around here. If you want to smoke in here, it's fine. And they're like, really? Is that okay? I was like, yeah. I used to smoke. I get it. Like, and they're like, well, if you used to smoke, then you definitely don't want me. I was like, oh, no. I don't think about it at all. I have no no, there's nothing. There's no relationship between me and those cigarettes. What there is a crippling superstition, like a fear of this universe that'll fucking crush me just to make a point, just to make my life a joke.
So that's your conceptualization of God is like some part of you thinks that there is this. And this is like, what do they say? There's some verse from the Bible. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Yeah, I think you know. Yeah, we have that expression, God fearing. When I was growing up in Wisconsin as a Lutheran, as a wayward Lutheran, my mom, she was really not that classically educated in religion at all. She didn't really have any of the trappings of a religious person, except for one thing. It's like, you gotta believe in God. That's it. I know that, like, if you broke a flower pot and you tried to lie about it, she'd say, well, you swear in the Bible. And if you know, I have these arguments with her when I started to get to that atheistic kind of puberty age. And I just remember her being just adamant about the fact that God exists, and saying that he doesn't, questioning whether or not he does, is the thing that pisses him off more than anything.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a unhealthy sounding kind of holdover, I think, from my that's how I learned about God. But at the same time, that is the God of the Old Testament. That's the God that says to Job, like, how dare you even fucking question me ever until you are as powerful as me. You don't understand what it takes to run a universe. You're a monkey. Shut up. And if I fuck with you on a bet with the devil, if I piss on your face in your sleep, say thank you. Or say banana if that's what I write on your cue card, because I'll explain when you're like me. And it is an angry God and a jealous God, and but it was also like the Pulp Fiction of gods. Like the Jews created a God that like got the job done so much that Christianity, you know, ripped it off.
Yeah. Christianity's voodoo Judaism.
Yeah, it's Terminator 2, like you know, it's like it's an upgrade in the form of like a more expensive kind of overdeveloped, like,
it happens all the time, man. Tibetan Buddhism is bon is equivalent to Christianity for Judaism, and voodoo is what is literally what Christianity did to Judaism, because voodoo is a combination, or at least some forms of voodoo, Santeria, is the combination of like Catholicism mixed in with African religions, and they right. kind of come together. Judaism, you've got, or Christianity, you've got Judaism, and then suddenly it like meets this kind of weird God sacrifice pagan idea, which is really a cool, it's cool. I like the way.
No, it's great. I mean, the idea that it is, I mean, the Old Testament religion is, it's the foundation of it, because you go, okay, so the universe has a relationship with me.
Yes.
It's my drunk dad. He's home from work. He's angry.
Yes.
If I, you know, that was a step up from saying, well, the leaves are overseen by Leaf Man. And he loves it when you rape. It was a step up to say, I mean, that was why this obscure tribe of people who had, you know, through a life of hardship culturally had developed this incredibly potent, like, paternal monotheistic relationship with the cosmos. Like, that's why, for all our whipping them and enslaving them, I say our, like I was an Egyptian, but like for all the Gentiles, non-Jews, whatever, everyone that wasn't a Jew, like picking on the Jews, like as we did that, we, you know, their awesome religion, like, you know, we picked up on it and we're like, holy shit, I love this.
Yeah.
This is great. It took over.
It's a man, but you know, this is something I've been thinking. It seems like the root of every single problem on the planet. This is such a dumb thing to say. Whatever I say after this has got to be stupid, but the root of every single problem on the planet is, or rather the intensity of every problem on the planet is determined, the catastrophic level of every problem on the planet is determined by the proximity that the people having the problem stand in relation to truth, in relation right. to really checking what's happening with reality. And so with religion, you get this, basically you get like, I think when I think of the Old Testament God, I think of gravity. I think of just jumping off a cliff. It's if you jump off the cliff, you've broken a law. There's no, as you're falling down, there's no, you're not on trial. There's no trial where you can like right. petition the universe to save you. You're just going to die. You broke a law. You're dead. And so this is the, when you get next to the cobra is going to bite you. And when it bites you, you're dead. It's right. When you step in the trap snaps shut and you're dead. And so from an evolutionary perspective, that's a good, in a more dangerous universe, that's a very good God to follow because that's exactly approximation or a personification of the universe that humans were living in.
You are not in control. You are the child. He is the father. You. It is not your house. It is his house.
Yeah.
And you get a haircut and get a job and until you are developed enough. Now that's the healthy aspect of upgrading these religions, both East and West, with these kind of like sequels where we have these prophets.
Yeah.
The idea that they share is that okay, we have gotten to the point where we are now capable of fucking with each other on an unprecedented level. There are more of us. We are living in cities, not caves. We are our own worst enemy. Bears are less of a threat than
yes.
they used to be. We have conquered. Like we are doing math. We are doing stars. We are doing the whole
yeah.
thing. We're irrigating, and we're murdering en masse. And so it is time for that Old Testament God staring down from a cloud and saying, if you fuck with me, you're dead. If you do wrong, you're dead because I said so. He's only as powerful as his kid is weak and in line. Like I shouldn't say weak. That's a pejorative term. I just mean like as his kid is like you know, it's like prom night. You know, you come home drunk and your dad is twice your age and it's like you're right at that nexus.
Where, yeah.
Like you're in your tux and your fucking muscles are developed and you got a gut full of gin and you maybe got laid that night and your dad's pissed at you because you wrecked the car. It's like, now yeah. It's time to tangle and atone with this previously
right.
Fatherly figure. And in that struggle, as you get taken down to the floor or take him down, whatever the outcome is, the fight itself results in a weird intermingling of your stations. Whose house is it now?
Yeah.
If I'm fighting you,
that's it.
I'm punching holes in the walls, and I'm a, so to keep us from destroying ourselves, just beating up our dad and then trashing the house like Pippi Longstocking, because we didn't have any parents. Like then we mythologize each other and ourselves. We go, okay, I am God.
Yeah.
I am his son. He is me. I have the power inside of me to fuck shit up, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's the evolutionary. It's sort of religion, and each one of these things creates a time period within which, if people really follow those ideas, lots of innovation can happen that leads to the next time period. So Christianity, suddenly, if you really follow Christianity, you're in this world of like absolute forgiveness, and also you're in a world where death becomes no big deal, where it's like, yeah, just go ahead and die. There's things bigger than life. Love is bigger than life. That's the idea, that regardless of anything else, the most important thing is love, and the most important thing is making a real connection with that energy. And once you do that, everything else you do is going to be fine. And so that creates an incredible environment to bring us into if everyone was to follow that philosophy or that idea, not the way the modern day Christians are doing it, but really everyone's just to drop the whole ego. If everyone stopped being Chris Brown and turned into Gandhi, then suddenly we would have the perfect civilization to create a time machine or to create some new technological advancement that would be the second coming of Christ. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I doing this Harmontown tour, this conceit is that I'm gonna go colonize the moon, or we're gonna find a place Harmontown where we can just be nerds that don't get everyone can do whatever they want, and this question of okay, what's our constitution going to be, comes up, and the initial temptation is to go, oh, okay, let's do a Bill Maher shtick where we like start creating all these rules, no close up magic, and if someone wears a Blues Traveler hat, you have to make fun of them and tell it, whatever your bits are, and you put, make this big constitution. But the funny thing is, like, nobody really, because they're making this documentary and they're asking them what should be in the constitution, and everybody, including me, keeps going like, I don't know, I don't want one, and it's governmentally, I think this kind of runs parallel to what you're talking about spiritually. I think it's time. We have the power in us to look at the Constitution, for instance, as a thing that was that got the job done really well.
Yeah.
In the time that it was done, we have now. The same way that the Christian church, which was originally founded on the idea that man, half God, and that each man has the power to redeem or doom the entire planet.
Yes.
And that therefore we need to unconditionally love each other, turned into simply a church, an organized church with a Capitol building becoming the Old Testament God, saying you fuck with us and you die.
Yes.
The same way that kind of degraded and happened. It was two steps forward, but sliding back a little bit. Like the Constitution was a list of rules and a list of instructions about how to amend them and just lists and lists and lists of itemized ways to make sure that everyone in the country is allowed to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And the big struggle is, like, everybody should be allowed to do whatever they want to do. We all know that that's true. We all would like that. I don't think there's not a single person on this planet. You could dig up Hitler, strike him with lightning, put his head on a plate, have a conversation with him. Do you think everyone should be allowed to do whatever they want to do? And he might, if he was feeling politically charged, like, well, it's except for the Jews. Hitler, calm down, Hitler. Like, get beyond that shit. It's 2013. I'm saying, Adolf Hitler, do you want everyone to be able to do whatever they want to do? I truly believe that after a half hour of fucking rhetoric and dogma about Germany, he would actually go, well, yes, but, and you'd go, no, just yes. Everyone gets to do whatever they want to do, except when it interferes with other people's ability to do whatever they want to do. And that's where the Harmontown Constitution stops, because it's just ... question mark. Like, what do we do in those situations? When I want to do something and I have a right to do it, but somehow it overlaps. If I do it, you don't get to do what you want to do. And my feeling is that we have codified morality, or we need to continue in that direction. We have now created computers that are capable of engaging in morality exercises with each other. I don't know if you've...
How do you mean?
Did you hear that Radiolab where... I can't remember the title of it, but it's about artificial intelligence. I'll try to summarize it very quickly, but there's this thought experiment called the Prisoner's Dilemma.
Yes.
You're familiar with that?
Yeah, but remind me again.
Prisoner's Dilemma is
snitching on your friends.
It's a game of kind of double blind poker where you can either fuck your friend. And your friend can, or not fuck your friend over, and your friend can do the same, and you don't know what he's going to do. And the irony of the Prisoner's Dilemma is that, and the reason it's called the Prisoner's Dilemma is because this is what cops do with suspects. If you and I are driving and they pick us up, they'll separate you and me, and they'll come into your room and say, Dan Harmon says that you murdered that guy, or that you put that weed in the glove box. And if you don't start telling us that it was him, you're going to jail, and he's walking out of here. Now, they're lying to you. And then they're coming into the room to me and saying, Duncan Trussell says that you put that weed in the glove box, and if you better be smart and the prisoner's dilemma is not that their cops are lying. The prisoner's dilemma is that there's no communication between you and me. Because if you and I were telepaths, or if we were in the same room, it would be the quickest game in the world. And
yeah.
The cops would never win. We would look at each other and go, sounds like they don't have much on us. Let's go to McDonald's. So the separation, the ignorance of each other's intention, the ignorance of what will happen in the future if we simply relax. Will someone steal my cookies if I don't protect them? If I don't take two cookies, even though I only want one right now, will some other asshole grab them and stuff them in his shirt? If I don't stockpile a bunch of nuclear arms, are the Russians gonna do that and then take over the world because they'll have the power to blow us up? It's always that dilemma of, if I don't do the bad thing, is someone else gonna beat me to the back?
Sure, this is Neil Armstrong, Neil Armstrong, the doper. Lance Armstrong. Right. Neil Armstrong went to the moon. This is a Lance Armstrong, the argument in sports, which is, I've got to dope because everyone else is doping.
Right.
So this is that. Right, I got you, man.
So the prisoner's dilemma is this thought experiment, and they, in this radio lab, they talked about how they had this conference where all of these artificial intelligence programmers were called upon to create a program as sophisticated or as unsophisticated as they chose, and basically play battle bots with AI programs that would play the prisoner's dilemma against each other thousands, millions of times, I think.
Yeah.
And so, like with battle bots, it was like, you know, someone would write a program that was incredibly simple. It would just be called the fucker, like the thing that just fucks you, like no matter, it's code is practically two lines long.
Yeah.
It's like fuck the other person, and fuck them again, and fuck everyone that comes near me.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that program's gonna win, like when it comes up against the so-called Jesus program that has also two lines of code that say, no matter what happens, just be cool. Like you probably caught him at a bad time. Forgive and forget. And like if those two programs are the only two programs in the biosphere,
yes,
the fucker is going to take over the earth. Like there will, the Jesus will go extinct because Jesus will always forgive and the Terminator will always like terminate.
Yeah.
And then, but the irony being, of course, then the Terminator is going to live in this horrible world.
That's it.
It's everyone's just fucking each other. And they don't want that either. And the reality is no one is a Jesus or a Terminator fucker. So there's all these other nuances of this program that other people created. And the one that ended up winning, meaning that the one that in any population will slowly take over, and more importantly, the one that if it was the only program in the room, all of the programs would never get fucked, is the one that says, it's like a little bit of a Jesus with a tweak. Like be nice, always be nice as a first step. If you get fucked, then next time, fuck.
Yeah.
But then go right back to the assumption that everyone, including the person that fucked you, whoever, like, don't hold a grudge. Just eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. That's really interesting. It's kind of like the martial artist. It's like the martial artist computer program is like the martial artist. Whenever you run into people who know, who've been training their whole lives, they're always the nicest people, and they always seem like the least dangerous. Right. And then you realize, and you forget that they can like just probably like shatter your head by punching you if they wanted to, but they don't because they've disciplined themselves.
Right.
But they have a stinger, you know.
Right.
And that there's something.
Well, Campbell talks. Yeah, that's the atonement with the father in mythology is about like getting the keys to that car that you would wreck if you weren't grown up enough. So you go through these trials and things. The whole point of of initiation is to make sure that, like, when they take kids out in the woods and circumcise them in these weird tribes where they still do that, the whole point of the initiation is at the end of it, it's like, okay, I cut off the tip of your penis. It was horrifying and manly and grisly, and it's all over now. And now when we go back to the village, you're not a little boy anymore. Now when your mom tells you be home for dinner, you can tell her to go fuck herself. But you also have to take care of your sister, and it's your house. And if the neighboring tribe attacks us, like, you're out there with a spear. Like, yeah. It's your village now. So don't just eat a bunch of gumdrops, because you could, but you'd fuck us over.
Here's the thing. This is the reason the Prisoner's Dilemma computer program is interesting, but it doesn't address what's really going on from a different angle. And there's a lot of different ways people say this. I used to hate it. It's particularly someone I've hated for a very long time is B.F. Skinner. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's B.F. Skinner. What a dick. Everything that you do,
right.
You have no free will.
You're just stimulated and then you respond.
You're stimulated and then you respond. And so Gurdjieff, the mystic cult leader-ish person, he said the exact same thing. We're spiritual machines. Until you really, it is difference between him and B.F. Skinner is until you really, really, really start working on yourself and discipline yourself, everything that you do is just a robotic learned response. You learn something from your parents. You learn something from someone you respected. You're an imitator. That's what humans do. They imitate what they consider to be the most successful thing around them, and that's it. You have no free will. Now, interestingly enough, in the Bhagavad Gita, this exact same thing comes up, but in a different way, where they say that there's these forces in the universe called the gunas, which is the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and the mode of goodness, and that all you are is this vortex, a combination of these three things. Like, in the same way, there's only a certain number of musical notes and all, or a certain number of letters. That's your alphabet. It's three things. It's like a little bit more than a ones and zeros. You're these three things interacting. Acting and anything that you,
what are those three things? It's passion,
goodness, and ignorance. So that, and it's those are translated words for something that's got, like, the words themselves have a lot of different meanings. So ignorance means, it's more like vibrational frequencies, heaviness to lightness. It's like, you know, when you're, you know, like the times in your life when you find yourself just eating the shit out of steak and like crappy food, not even steak, fast food. When you find yourself just eating like shitty food, you'll also notice that you're doing a lot of other freakish things to yourself at the same time. Well, that's because the mode of ignorance is very, is being your, that's like the bit, that's the most paint added to your paint can, right? So, and then there's times when you're in work mode and you're like constantly working hard, disciplined, working, you're caught up in that vortex. That's the mode of passion. And then there's those incredible times where you've reached this kind of like nice, peaceful, tranquil place and you find yourself meditating more, eating like, you'll be eating better food all of a sudden and like, you probably be treating people a little differently than you might have been. And that's the mode of goodness. And so it's broken down into periods of time. The morning is considered to be in the mode of goodness. The working day is the mode of passion, and night would be the mode of ignorance, because that's when you become sluggish and tired and fall asleep. And graveyards, now this is different. Now graveyards are more in the mode of goodness, but in India, char pits is what they were talking about, places where the smoldering, smoky corpses were being cremated and dogs are like carrying off cream feet. Yeah, they still do that in the banks of the Ganges River. You can go on the internet and just check out videos of dogs just eating corpses. And there's people over there who eat corpses as a form of sacrament to worship.
Yeah, there's a website where there's a real-time webcam and you can click your mouse for $1 and you can a foot will be ejected from a from a chamber to a dog.
That would solve the economic crisis in a day, we would have trillions of dollars.
You sell what you got, man. It's like, you know, like the biggest problems in the Middle East are caused by people not being born on top of oil. But, you know, it's like there's got to be something sell your 9/11 abilities.
India becomes, within 5 days, India is like a superpower because they have so much money from people feeding feet to dogs.
They figured out, yeah, their biggest export is the lower classes, corporeal degradation.
Corporeal degradation. Well, so anyway, the whole point of all that is that you've got this. So the idea is you get the Big Bang, whatever that was, that event that physics has, that we see that there was an event that apparently everything emerged from, that it appears to be some form of explosion. And at the very beginning of that event, you have this pure moment, that singularity, a pure moment, whatever that is, whether it's before the other universe that we're the sewage system for came bursting into and inflated the nothingness or whatever, you have this pure moment, easy math, a zero, essentially, an incomprehensible zero. And then bam, that thing blows up. And now a chain reaction has happened. And we have this series of equations that start running based on that initial explosion, which is, if you are in a laboratory and you sit down, or if you have a computer simulation, you know every single component of that simulation, how much pressure is going to be applied to the explosion, the room the thing explodes within, then I think that you could pretty much mathematically track the trajectory and the arc of every single variable within that, except for, like, I guess maybe at the quantum level, the electron spin and that stuff, that's the big mystery, I guess. But so the idea is, we're still part of that explosion, and we're just math working itself out. And as part of the math working itself out, we have constructed in our minds this idea that we are in control of what we're doing. This idea of free will itself is just another piece of that equation working itself out. And so this prisoner's dilemma implies free will, I guess. That's the idea. And this conceptualization of the self or the universe involves not trying to... It involves letting go and trusting, just letting go and trusting that what you're doing, whether it's you're chomping on a foot on the bank of the Ganges River, or you're in Vegas and you're just having unprotected sex with fucking hookers or whatever the thing is, it's all of a sudden recognizing, like, oh, this is just part of that original explosion that happened so very long ago, mm-hmm. rolling, playing itself out. And I'm as much a perfected part of this as Martin Luther King or Gandhi or whoever. And I'm just going to let go. I'm going to let go in this moment of beingness. And somehow from that, that's the beginning of, like, the shift starts happening.
Well, that's another way of saying that if everyone in the world simultaneously became that Jesus program that unconditionally surrenders to the prisoner's dilemma, that also you would have a perfect world. The only problem is that if you put one like mutant in there, anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes over.
No,
it is true that if we evolve consciously, like, and I think that to tie these things together with I don't think that the Harmontown Constitution, aka the Harmontown syllogism, this geometric proof, whatever this piece of moral code is that should be so simple that we don't need judges, we don't need juries, we don't need senates, we don't need laws. We just need to know this one thing, that is, and that any number of people in any kind of conflict would be able to play this kind of like mental patty cake game, where the end result would be not necessarily both parties being 100% happy in that moment, but it would be resolved for that moment and then done with. Like I don't think that code is going to be the one that beat the other AIs in this computer game, because I don't like the sound of it's too complicated to say forgive everybody no matter what unconditionally, except if you feel like you got fucked, then you get to fuck as much as you feel like.
Well,
you
that's got fucked, that's
and
Satanism.
Then go back to being nice again.
You end up in that's Satanism. See, that in Satanism, there's this idea which is sounds great at first, which is like I will help my friends as much as possible, but my enemies. Oh, my enemies. I will destroy them, crush them beneath my heel. How does the verse go in the fucking satanic Bible, in the satanic mass? It's this awesome verse, which is just something like, my enemy, I will crush my enemy, and if he lives, then I will have given him a great lesson. You know, it's this really creepy.
It's an interesting thing about evil is... It is that it propagates itself by getting you to acknowledge, much like God, it propagates itself by getting you to think that it exists and therefore needs to be fought.
It propagates itself by logic, and logic. This is what we're talking about here: is illogic, and that's the story of Jesus is an illogical solution. It's like, oh, okay, kill me.
Right.
This is also the Obi-Wan Kenobi solution. Right, right. It's the exact same thing. What is it Obi-Wan Kenobi says? If you destroy me, I will come back...
with a huge dick. Hard on. I can't remember.
If you kill me, my cock will grow. But it is similar to that. And so...
If you strike me down, I will come back more powerful than you can imagine.
Yes. And that idea... See, this is the idea that I love because
Jesus said, if you aren't afraid to die... Now I'm really paraphrasing. If you're not afraid to die... or get hurt, then no one has any power over you, because the people that are beating the shit out of you and threatening to kill you, that's the only power they have. And once you take that away from them, you own the world.
And this is where you get into contentious territory, because it's like, here's where atheists start getting really like pissed off, because they're like, oh great, so just abandon the world, there you go, just abandon the world, fuck this little stupid only planet that we know that exists in the entire universe with life on it, and just give up and just let the people kill you instead of fighting back and trying to create some kind of paradise planet by overthrowing all the different governments and continuing this endless cycle. And so that idea is based on individuality. The individuality is real and not an illusion. This other idea is based on this thing that we're all just this one thing that's happening right now. We're all just this one thing that's gotten confused into thinking it's a bunch of different little pieces. And so the answer is, you have to be willing to die. And the answer is, you're not just willing to die because you want to die. You're willing to die because you've connected with something bigger. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. You know that this thing's headed in the right direction. You understand that where we're going is a beautiful, beautiful place as a civilization. As insane as that seems, as the phenomena of the world seems crazy, as fucking North Korea drops nukes and Syria chops ears off kids and the dogs chew the feet on the banks of the Ganges River, this is still, compared to the way the world used to be, just 500 years ago, a much more beautiful place and a much more incredible place.
But are we going in relation to the Bhagavad Gita? Are we, if it started with purity and became passion, then aren't we headed for what's the third thing?
Ignorance. Well, this is sure. So this is like the idea of, it's not, I mean, fuck the all of society. Look at our bodies. You start off as this beautiful, sweet-smelling little fucking pink thing that's like light and can, you know, you could throw a kid into a fucking airplane propeller, it'll probably practically survive.
For those of you listening,
they're so flexible.
We gotta run this through legal before.
But they're so flexible, man, and as you get older, the body collapses and you do go into the mode of ignorance. You inevitably, your neurology falls apart. But, and so this is why they say that the age that we're in right now is the Kali Yuga, the age of destruction, the age of disintegration, the age of collapse. And this is a very, when you hear it, it sounds very pessimistic, but the difference between Hinduism and Buddhism and Christianity is the God of, well, Buddhism doesn't really have a God, but the God in Hinduism, God is not good. There's not even this idea that there's like this, that God's like all good. There's Shiva, the destroyer, chomping the heads off the gods, like destroying the planet. This is winter.
Right.
So the idea is, it's like, we're not getting caught up anymore in, oh, fuck, it's winter, things are bad. Oh, it's spring, things are good. We're seeing that everything is the exact same thing. We're not just seeing, you know, it's the story of like the, you know, the story of like the blind man touching the elephant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wall, it's a trunk, it's right. a tree, it's an elephant. And so that's the difference. It's like, it's getting, for the fucking Harmontown Constitution, the idea would be, connect with the totality of everything and let that be the thing that the Constitution comes out of. Right. Fuck. Go on top of a mountain, brother. You got to fast and let it come out of you.
I don't know if I can, because Harmontown is such a, it's a temple to my narcissism. It's a temple to, and it's an invitation to everyone to be a narcissist, you know, and like the liberation of that, like thumb sucking, tantrum throwing, kind of like, leave me alone. I want to be able to do whatever I want to do. The collective that we are, like, if I go up on that mountain and say, hey, we are all a part of one thing, it's kind of like, I think the reason we have zero motivation to do that is because it does feel like your ego, the thing that is, okay, so exactly like the devil and exactly like God, your ego, I think, therefore I am, like, your identity is only propagated by acknowledgement of its existence. So with evil, it's, if I can convince you that your neighbor is a homophobe and that he hates gay people and he's a bad guy, I can get you, if I talk enough shit about his homophobia and how he stepped on a gay guy's face yesterday just for being gay and he's a bad guy, I can get you to like take human poop and smear it on his door. We might end up, you know, beating him up.
Yeah.
Bashing him for gay bashing.
Yeah.
And evil is making all that happen because evil doesn't care if you're bashing or gay bashing or gay bashing. Evil wants bashing.
Yeah.
And evil doesn't care if you're racist against black people or if you're, you know, lynching racists. Evil just wants, like, people not trusting each other. And so God, on the other side of that, God wants everybody maybe to let go, or maybe God is that thing, like you're saying, God is basically like the most boring of the whole Trinity. He's, because he is just that purity that happened before anything interesting started to happen.
Brahman.
And by his nature, then he is an invitation to return to that. And you only do that by letting go of this other thing, which is your ego. You know, it says the thing that's telling you you're Duncan Trussell, the thing that's telling me I'm Dan Harmon. Instead of it's getting in the way of you and I going, hello, we're Duncan Trussell.
Well, what we are is we're standing in front of ourselves at the concert. That's the problem. It's like you can't see the show because you're in your own way. And that's like the great existential predicament and the root of absurdity and the thing that drove like Sartre insane is this feeling of like, I can't get to the fucking truth because I am in the way. My very existence is keeping me from it. And it does seem fucking boring. It seems boring at first when you consider it, especially if you consider it from the perspective of the ego. But I think the way to look at it would be more like, you and I are in the most awesome video game ever, and the video game is an advanced simulation of existence. And for the video game to really be fun, the mode that you have to put it in to really have fun is your memory of what you used to be gets erased. You go into the fucking game. You get a new identity implanted inside of you, and that's the game that you play, is from that perspective, that identity. And as you progress through the game, in the same way awesome video games are this, the sense gratification increases with your ability.
Your powers get more, yeah, closer and closer to you just not playing a video game.
Yes.
Because if you can fly over these buildings, then the buildings might as well not exist, at which point, you know, like when you get to a point in power-ups in these video games where they finally get you to the point where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, so this is the equivalent of looking at a napkin dispenser because
yes,
nothing is killing me anymore.
There it is. And so that's the idea. This game, the way it rewards you is the diminishing amnesia. You get a state of diminishing amnesia that happens the more you sort of work.
Slowly start to
wake up.
Wake up, come to the surface, and your friends, the faces of your friends that you, that you know, Blim Flork and Flim Flam, you know, from Saturn or wherever, whatever the reality is, like that reality, this the people playing the video game, like slowly starts to come into focus.
Yeah, so. Yes, and that's when you begin to understand. See, that's when you run into people in this video game. So you'll come across people who are deeply into their fucking character. And this is why, and I know it's cheesy, but this is why I mentioned Chris Brown, because God damn it, that guy is really playing Chris Brown, and he's like really, really into his identity so much. It's fucking beautiful and awesome to see someone that devoted to being themselves at all costs. He thinks he's Jesus. He doesn't understand about, he's a purely a selfish prick, and it's awesome to see. So in this video game, what ends up happening is you start recognizing, like, oh, he's playing a game, I'm playing a game, but I'm starting to realize it's a game. I'm waking up. Another way I think of it is like if you were in a spaceship going somewhere, they would put you in the hibernation pods, but then they would also probably try to project something into your mind so you wouldn't go insane over the course of the fucking long, long trip. And maybe this is the beginning. People start waking up to their identity in the pods right before the fucking thing opens up. And you begin to recognize other people haven't quite figured out this, the truth of that, what they really are.
Right, like when you're dreaming, sometimes that happens. You hear your alarm clock, or you hear, you know, and there's many points in a lot of dreams that I've had where I am very conscious of the fact that I am in a dream, you know, and the dream doesn't necessarily get better or worse at that point, but it's an odd sensation. Like you're running around. It's like, okay, I get it. I still have to get to work.
Yeah.
I still have to find my pants, but I know this is a dream.
Yes. Yes. And that is called moksha. That's called liberation, is the name of it in Hinduism. And it's like the idea is, suddenly you realize, like, oh, it's not the atheists are upset about the idea of the Christian heaven. And I understand why, because it's like you fantasize about this delusional thing that is an ego projection of what paradise would be like.
Yeah, and you're hitting your wife and you're,
yeah,
dumping oil into the river.
Yes, yes. So I get it. But this is a different thing altogether, which is the notion that we actually are infinite consciousness temporarily trapped in this bubble of flesh called our bodies. And if that's real, and you just play around with a thought experiment that that's fucking real and this goes on forever, then suddenly the intensity of all the catastrophes that inevitably emerge in your life will diminish to the point where you're not going to react to them from a level of punching your wife or dumping oil in the river.
Right. And there's that point when you're playing multiplayer video games where you can fly into these rages about how many times you're getting killed, or the fact that you're getting killed for the first time or whatever. And then there's, you know, or you can surrender to the fact that you don't know how to play the game yet. You're going to get killed and you get killed.
Yeah.
There's a certain point. I really don't like playing those multiplayer games. They're hard to get started into, but the ones that I have gotten addicted to, it's like, it's easy to start staying up all night and like, I'm not yelling faggot and the N-word over the headset at these 15-year-old kids. It's kind of like it's more like you rise above it because you've died so many times that it starts to become like this kind of fun ballet. It's just like you respawn and then you're charging at this place. You just kind of start experimenting with different suicidal techniques, and then you start, you know, it.
That's it. That's the game. And so everyone thinks like, oh, spiritual realization is going to lead you to like sitting under a tree throwing flowers at people. It's not that. It's like when you start waking up in a dream, there's so many fun fucking things you can do in the dream. It's not like suddenly in the dream you wake up and you start going around to the other people in the dream. You're like, this is a dream, you know. It's like you think, well, fuck, can I fly? Right. What else can I do? Can I
open a donut shop?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, man. And if we're all experiencing, if we're all individuations of some super consciousness, then, and then the first job would be to wake up, right? And then just from that very act, hopefully people around you are going to be less, they're not even understand it, but they're going to feel less scared because you're not freaking out.
What if the, yeah, I mean, like the video game, also we've talked about this before, this idea of, you know, the metaphor of the video game,
yeah,
the thought experiment.
I love it.
Video game. Like I've every time we use that metaphor, I always think of it as like, oh, it's a multiplayer game and we're, you know, you're playing it, and you're actually my friend Dave from accounting in this like different world. Maybe it's identical to this one. Maybe it's like, maybe we have three heads. Maybe we're dogs. But you're my friend Dave from accounting. You're playing Duncan Trussell. You have no idea you're Dave from accounting. You've lived this whole life. You'll finish the game before me or after me. You'll have more money or less money when you, or guns and bullets or cars or whatever. But I also like you know, the you can merge that metaphor with your other thing and say, well, this, you know, God is playing a single player video game that where it's immersive, because the first thing that happens when the game starts is not just amnesia on an individual level. You are God. You started the video game. What's for sale on the package is you are going to explode from nothingness into a bazillion particles and slowly evolve into, you know,
awesome.
You are, you know, there's like screenshots on the back of like a cosmos exploding, but then there's also like, there's like two people hanging out at a drugstore, like fighting with each other. Is this old housewife writing a letter to TV Guide because she didn't like How I Met Your Mother that week? And, like, it's all you. It's all you.
You will be.
You will be outraged at your own racism. You will dump yourself on prom night and think that it makes you cool. Then you'll write an angry blog about it at 35 and call yourself a cunt and think that that makes you cool. You will do both at the same time.
$59.99.
You will give birth to yourself. Your vagina will split open.
Yeah, yes. And you will finally wake up to the realization that you're playing a video game and experience some infinite paradise moment at the end of the whole thing. I mean, yeah, that's the idea.
Each little, instead of it being like, oh, when I die, I wake up and all my friends are high-fiving and laughing because I was acting goofy while I was playing the game. It's like, it's even better than that. It's each little part of you will die. The game's not actually over until all of you has died. Each little part of you isn't going to care because that's a problem to solve itself. But then, like, the whole thing finishes. It's like a bungee jump for one person. And then you wake up and then you go, let's do it again.
That's awesome. The game ends when either you have wiped yourself out completely through some terrible Holocaust apocalyptic event through your own greed or pollution.
Or just let all the Big Bang recoalesce into a big, boring, fucking big suck or whatever.
Yeah, or I mean, that's kind of the fucked up part of the game, I guess, would be that one of the big tricks of the game is when every single individual on the planet is either destroyed itself or woken up, and you zap back to being the octopus or the dog or the thing that you think you are. That's just the second level of the game. It just keeps going back and back forever. And that's the loop that we're stuck in. Man, I love it when you come on my podcast, Dan.
I love it when I come on your podcast.
Man, Harmon, I'm sure you guys already listened to the Harmontown podcast, but if you don't, you've got to check it out. It's amazing. When does that live show go up?
I don't know. I have to listen to it. It was 3 hours long.
So good, man. That Marin's story was so fucking funny, man. Yeah. That was a great... Your rapping is insane. So good, man. That's going to be an incredible podcast. If you guys have not listened to Harmontown, you've got to listen to it. Follow Dan Harmon on Twitter. What's your Twitter?
Dan Harmon.
Dan Harmon on Twitter. Send him your love. Help him solve this problem of coming up with a constitution.
All right, yeah. And you guys, hey, listen to Duncan Trussell.
Please. Hare Krishna. Okay, everybody, that was Dan Harmon. If you like that, why not give us a good rating on iTunes or send us a little donation or join the message board. Now, this song I'm about to play is very special. A listener sent me the Love, Serve, Remember vinyl album set that Ram Dass put out in 1973. And this is a song on one of the six or seven albums that comes with that called Gita Song. I tried to find it online. I couldn't find it anywhere online. So I recorded it from my USB record player so you guys could hear it. So please enjoy from Love, Serve, Remember, Gita Song. And since I don't know where to get this on iTunes, why not go to ramdass.org and join up over there, because there's tons of cool downloadable content over there. Okay, thanks for listening, you guys. Here's Gita Song.
Game after game I've played without shame, daily gambled for name and for fame. But now you've shown me a path through it all, and if you'll help me, I believe I won't fall. Lord, here is pleasure, here is pain, here is loss, here is gain. Take them all, I pray, and give me pure love for thee. If I can please thee, Lord, tell me now. If I can serve thee, please show me how. For I want to live only to give everything I am to thee. Lord, here is youth, here is age, here's the first and the final page. Take them all, I pray, and give me pure love for thee. Rolling round this wheel of death and birth, what is it worth? All the bitter and the sweetness too, they're nothing to me, I want only you. Only you. Lord, here is youth, here is age, here's the first and the final page. Take them all, I pray, I pray. Lord, here is pleasure, here is pain, here is loss, here is gain. Take them all, I pray, and give me pure love for thee. Fill me with love for thee. Give me pure love for thee.